I listened intently to your piece about the umpire who, week in, week out, tells the referee to do it himself. And it certainly reached your usual standards, a club chairman told me during the week. And in a commendably un-Irish way, I accepted the compliment with some style. But, he added, by way of expanding our emerging dialogue, you were 20 years out of touch. Great umpires are a thing of the past. Finito. And if you ask me, their demise is the harbinger of worrying times ahead for the GAA. I took what he said seriously, not least because it was the first time I had heard the word harbinger deployed in polite conversation. And you know, I think he has a point, though maybe one that's a yard or two outside the post. I grew nostalgic thinking about the great umpires I have known. Almost without exception, it ran in the family, like agrarian nicknames such as Badger, Doggy, and Horse. Show me 20 great umpires, and I can tell you about their fathers, and their grandmothers before them too, and how easily they wore the mantle of neighbourhood terrorists through countless generations. The best umpire I knew, a wary, low-sized man who never taxed his car, and was so regularly prosecuted for green diesel, he became known as Texas, or Tex for short. He enjoyed edgy relationships with approximately 50% of the parish, and the other 50%, well, he didn't talk to them at all. What he borrowed from his neighbours, he never gave back. He was remarkably stout, a man of strongly held principles, and it was said of him famously that he could park his car in the goals on county final day and not believe he was causing obstruction. When a fundraising campaign was held to select the most unpopular man around, the judges sensationally declined to confer the honour upon him, on the not unreasonable grounds that he would not be a popular choice. Ah, but come Sunday, he always stood his ground. He rarely washed, kept his hair unkempt, deemed a toothbrush to be an unnecessary affectation, and all of these endearing personal quirks combined to dissuade the opposing umpire from drawing the referee upon them, for fear they would be gathered together in a worryingly tight huddle. Over the years, he tended to win most battles. Ah, but the likes of him has gone now. What are clubs to do? They could, as in days of old, trawl the parish for well-set, low-sized young men, or indeed women, times are in it, on the basis that all great umpires conform to that build. But with the rampancy of morbid obesity in our society, it's next to impossible to sort the wheat from the chaff. If the Christian Brothers were still around in numbers, they'd have the emerging great umpires from an early age. They'd see something in the way they wouldn't share a package of hunky-dories or allow a classmate cog his three-time tables, and not unlike the manner in which vocations were managed in this country for decades and decades, these aspiring candidates would be discreetly placed on a fast track to great umpiring greatness. You could tell a great umpire that today is Thursday, and damn it to hell if he wouldn't seek a second opinion. That kind of quality can't be bought. It's an innate attribute, genetically bestowed, and utterly beyond coaching. To my club chairman friend, I say, it is now a matter of brushing up on your talent spotting. Get great umpires of old into the schools to cast an eye over the next generation and nurse them along. Don't presume that great umpires will emerge just by chance. You won't find them in your local juice bar, or indeed in the front row of mass. And most of all, they will not come through the School of Excellence system. I wish you the very best of luck in your endeavours. It's a vital task, you know. An incredibly vital task.